Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 25, Canto 10, Chapter 3. Nashte loke dvi parada davasane Mahabhuteshvadi bhutam gatesho Vyakte vyaktam kala vegena yate Bhavan ikakshishyate shesha sangya Nashte loke dvi parada dvasane Mahabhuteshvadi bhutam gateshu Vyakte vyaktam kala vegena yate Bhavan ekakshishyate shesha sangya sangya nashte after the annihilation loke of the cosmic manifestation dvi prarada avasane after millions and millions of years the life of Brahma mahabhuteshu when the five primary elements earth, water, fire, air and ether adi bhutam gateshu enter within the subtle elements of sense perception Vyakte, when everything manifested, avyaktam, into the unmanifested, kala vegena, by the force of time, yate, enters, bhavan, your lordship, ekaha, only one, shishyate, remains, ashesha sangyaha, the same one with different names. Translation, after millions of years, at the time of cosmic annihilation, when everything manifested and unmanifested is annihilated by the force of time, the five gross elements enter into the subtle conception. And the manifested categories enter into the unmanifested substance. At that time, you alone remain, and you are known as Ananta Shesha Nag. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. At the time of annihilation, the five gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, enter into the mind, intelligence, and false ego, ahankara. And the entire cosmic manifestation enters into the spiritual energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who alone remains as the origin of everything. The Lord is therefore known as Shesha Nag, as Adi Purusha, and by many other names. Devaki therefore prayed, quote, so it's restating, broken down a little bit further. After many millions of years, when Lord Brahma comes to the end of his life, the annihilation of the cosmic manifestation takes place. At that time, the five elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, enter into the Mahat Tattva, the Mahat tattva again enters by the force of time into the non-manifested total material energy. The total material energy enters into the energetic pradhan, and pradhan enters into you. Therefore, after the annihilation of the whole cosmic manifestation, you alone remain with your transcendental name, form, quality, and paraphernalia. Continuing the quote, "My dear Lord, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you because you are the director of the unmanifested total energy and the ultimate reservoir of the material nature. My Lord, the whole cosmic manifestation is under the influence of time, beginning from the moment up to the duration of the year. All act under your direction. You're the original director of everything and the reservoir of all potent energies." So many things here. Again, I'll mention the irrational feature of Devaki's fear when she knows the position, Krishna, the infallible. When everything is annihilated, he remains. So the irrationality is, I'm fearful that Kamsa may come and try to kill you. It's a transcendental emotion, her parental affection, that's in conflict with her transcendental knowledge of Krishna's position. And another point is, she's well acquainted with the scriptures. One of the formidable or mountain kind of categories of understanding is the process of creation. And she understands it. She's a lady. But she understands it. But she understands it and she understands it very well. And so she's acquainted with the scripture. Because who can understand these things otherwise? We can't. Vyasadeva could, because he compiled the Vedas, but he received that knowledge directly from Narada, who received it directly from Brahma, who understood it, receiving it directly from the Supreme Lord. So we can understand these things through the process of hearing. Descending knowledge comes through the process of hearing. And otherwise, the other process of knowing is ineffective. To know. So there's different theories, and big scholars and scientists and people have their theories. The Vedic wisdom isn't a theory, it's knowledge, descending knowledge. And she knows. And she has full faith in the scripture, and she has full faith in the Supreme Lord. So now another point is the force of time, kala vegena. We know this word vega from Nectar of Instruction. Vega. Prabhupada is translated there as urge. Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, vegam. Vega means urge or pushing. Here, it's the force of time, kala vegena. So we can understand behind those six urges mentioned in Nectar of Instruction, there's the force of time, because time moves everything. And time, as we know it, acts upon souls whose consciousness is turned away from Krishna. And so there's pushings that are acting on us. And guess what? Time is stronger than us. That's one of Krishna's potencies directly. We have some free will, we can turn this way or that way, but time is moving things. Time is moving matter. It's how creation begins, and by the force of time, Purusha, Maha, Vishnu withdrawing the force of time, or Rama, Devi doing that on his behalf, you pull the plug and the whole show stops. So, kala vegena, time is behind everything. And we know from Bhagavad Gita, time I am. It's time he is in the sense that it's his potency, and then there's time as we know it, which is relative time as opposed to eternal time, or in contrast with eternal time, but there's a connection between the relative time and the eternal time, as there is between creation and the source of creation, as there is between the sunshine and the sun, the effect and the cause of the effect. So he is the original cause who is connected to the effect. The effect doesn't exist without the cause. And that goes to the previous verse. There's a connection between the previous verse. The first of her prayers is, you have unlimited forms. And that unlimited form is absolute. The absolute truth exists before time as we know it, during time as we know it, and after time is over, or time as we know it is over. Related, very important, one of the four essential verses, the first of the four essential verses of the Bhagavatam, the Chaturshloki verses, Canto 2, Chapter 9, those four verses. It says, Aham evasam evagre. Before creation, I alone exist. During cosmic manifestation, I alone existed. After annihilation, I alone exist. So there's this non-different relationship between the energies and the energetic. This verse in particular, her prayer, is speaking of the non-difference during the cosmic annihilation of those three, before, during, and after. So she's speaking the after, but the after indicates something about during also. So the previous verse is about Vishnu and the forms of Vishnu being absolute. The final sentence of the previous purport is the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy, and that is specific to the forms of Vishnu, the various avatars, but it's also specific to, as in this verse, the features of matter. It doesn't speak about the living entities, it's speaking about matter. But so, matter is withdrawn by the force of time. And when it's withdrawn by the force of time, you alone exist. It's a elaboration on that Chaturshloki verse. And another point is, it's a little curious. I'll point out the curious element. there's four different descriptions in one verse in purport about how it happens or what happens. Not how, but what. In the word for word, from the second line, Adi Bhutam Gateshu, Adi Bhutam Gateshu. Gati means goal or destination. So the five elements, Mahabhutas, they enter into the subtle elements of sense perception. Okay, that's one. The five elements enter into the subtle elements of sense perception. In the verse, number two, the five elements enter into the subtle conception. In the first, number three, in the first paragraph of the purport, the five elements enter into mind, intelligence, and false ego. And number four, the five elements enter into the Mahatattva. What's going on here? Is Prabhupada contradicting himself? Not possible. That's a fundamental. So there's different ways of saying the same thing. And you can skip some steps, because this is the cause of that, which is the cause of that, which is the cause of that, which is the cause of that. And so you can say, this is the cause of that, and skip some steps. Okay, not wrong. The subtle elements of sense perception, those of you that are just love the process of creation topic, along with the element, each element comes the sense and the object of the sense. So let's say fire. With fire comes sight and comes the sense of perception, of seeing. Not just the eye, but the sense of perception. It's subtle with the element. So, to see form. And smell, and you know, so it comes nose and the sense of smelling. So even if your nose is broken or something, you know, it's not functioning, the sense, the subtle sense is there. And before those comes false ego. Right? The first element that separates out of the pradhan is false ego. And then false ego mixes with the modes of nature, and then different things separate out in contact with false ego in the modes of nature. So there's the slow motion, and then there's the in-between motion, and then there's just the big jump. So you can say it enters into false ego. That's what's in the... At the time of annihilation, the five gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, enter into the mind, intelligence, and false ego. But before the mind and intelligence, there's the false ego. The false ego mixing with the modes of nature. Goodness comes the mind. passion, come material intelligence, and ignorance comes the five elements. So the five elements merge into the five gross elements, merge into the subtle elements, but that goes back to the false ego. So here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's explanation. The five elements enter into Adi Bhuta. That's in the verse. Mahabhuteshu Adibhutam Gateshu. The five elements enter into Adibhutam, which he has translated as Ahankara. But there's some steps that in the purport Prabhupada is unpacking, and it can be further unpacked. You with me? Okay, good. Good. It's not a contradiction. It's just a simplified explanation or more complete explanation or even a more complete explanation that there may be some steps left out. Then Vishnath says, from that, the Adibhutam or Ahankara, it merges into the Vyaktam. Vyaktam is Mahatattva. And then the Mahatattva merges into Pradhan, or the Avyakta. Those terms are in the verse. Vyakte Avyaktam. So it's the process of annihilation by pulling the plug, by pulling time, and time then collapses the whole of the creation. And when the whole of creation collapses, what's left is the source of everything. Now, there is another kind of puzzling thing, reading from the purport paragraph 1, the entire cosmic manifestation enters into the spiritual energy. Well, what's Pradhan? Pradhan is the undifferentiated totality of material elements. And Pradhan is a reflection or shadow or maid servant of Ramadevi, the internal potency. So she, Pradhan, or Chayadevi, is a maid servant of Ramadevi, the spiritual potency. So there's a connection between the reflection and the object that the reflection is a reflection of. So it's a very simplified statement to say the entire cosmic manifestation enters into the spiritual energy. It's under the control. Never was not under the control, but the differentiation is now withdrawn, and so under the full control. So let's do it the other way. Before the cosmic manifestation, I alone exist. But I alone exist doesn't mean there's no Ramadevi, that she suddenly comes into existence. Voila. Or that the Pradhan, the Chayadevi, the reflection of her, didn't exist, and then suddenly, voila, it exists. There, Prakriti is eternal. Sometimes manifest, sometimes not manifest. Sometimes manifest, sometimes not manifest. But Prakriti is eternal. There's the five topics of Bhagavad Gita, and one is temporary. Karma is the one that's temporary, but Prakriti is eternal. As are the living entities, time, the Supreme Lord, and Prakriti, they're eternal. Karma's temporary. Prakriti is eternal. So that eternal Prakriti is under the Lord's direction. It's His potency. It's His potency now. You know, look around and whatever you see, whatever is the Vyakta state, it's His potency. And His potency is meant for His enjoyment, not for ours. Separate enjoyment. And the happiness of the living entity is to see the happiness of the Supreme Lord, to engage that Prakriti in service to the Supreme Lord. That's the program. That's the bhakti path, to reawaken that capacity to see everything in relation to the Supreme Lord and use that everything in service to the Supreme Lord. That's perfection. That's happiness. That's love. That's bhakti. So Devaki gets it. She is pure devotee. And she's stating, as she's seeing this form of Vasudev Krishna standing before her, not a little baby yet, but a form of Vasudev Krishna standing before her with all the symbols of Vishnu, etc., she understands exactly who he is. In detail, in relation to everything, in relation to creation, let's say. Time is under his control. So this phrase, nashte loke dvi parardha avasane. Dvi parardha, if you read carefully the Bhagavatam, that calculation of time by the atom. The biggest measure of time, or one of the biggest, is dvi prarardha. So the life of Brahma is made of two of those. Half and half, 50 years and 50 years. That's dvi prarardha. So Prabhupada has made it simple, millions and millions of years. But that's the lifetime of Brahma. So nashte loke dvi prarardha avasane. When the time of cosmic annihilation comes, the life of Brahma is over. Mahat bhuteshu adibhutam gateshu. Everything is withdrawn under this kala vegena, the force of time. And then into the vyakta, into the avyakta. Bhavan eka, your lordship, your one entity, and everything is also yours in that sense, you. A detail, it's not in the purport, but because I recently had this discussion with somebody in his college days. He had a professor in India that was a Sri Vaishnava scholar, and the whole semester he learned Ramanuja's teaching. And his teaching is everything that exists is inherently within Narayana. Who knows the name of his vada, his doctrine? Vishishta Advaita. No, Vishishta. So Vishishtas are attributes. And everything is an attribute, and it adheres or is inherently within Narayana. And those Vishishtas, or the attributes, or everything, is absolutely non-different, Advaita. Now, the distinction with Mahaprabhu's teaching is different and non-different. I won't go there too much, but it's quite similar but different. Oneness and difference at the same time. And there's a reason for why that difference is important. But then, when that state where the everything is back into its avyakta condition, the vishishtas or the attributes or the potencies under the force of time are brought back to the state of oneness, not absolute oneness, but oneness and difference kind of oneness, then shishyate, what remains is ashesha sangya. Ashesha sangya. And this ashesha sangya is spoken of in different terms. Ashesha sangya, the word for word is the same one with different names. What our acharyas explain is the abode of, there's Narayana, or there's Mahavishnu, and then there's all of his potencies, his paraphernalia, and his cloth, and his everything, his what's in his hands, Garuda, the whole shebang. That's manifest by Ashesha Nag. So he explains like this. This is Sanatana Goswami. Because you remain Ava Shesha. What's left, that's Shesha or Ava Shesha, and thus his name, Shesha. Unlimited. That's how Prabhupada is often translated. Shesha. Unlimited. He has unlimited mouths, unlimited, he's unlimited, unlimited hoods. How many hoods? Unlimited. And he manifests everything. The abode of the Lord, the paraphernalia of the Lord, and all that remains is Anantashesha. So Anantashesha doesn't mean just the serpent bed of the Supreme Lord. It's everything, the whole spiritual world, as described in Bhagavad Gita. There is that place when this whole cosmic manifestation is annihilated. That remains. And the name is Shesha, or Anantashesha. But it's not just the serpent, Anantashesha. His expansion is all of his expansions in the spiritual realm. His spiritual potency manifesting whatever is suited for the Lord's pastimes and his pleasure. So that's the picture that Devaki is giving in this prayer. And circle back around to the mystery. Understanding all these things in such detail, she's feeling trepidation. Kamsa may come and try to kill you. It's bhava. It's rasa. It's her transcendental love in a particular feature of love, the Mathura feature of love. Microphone?
Hare Krishna. So the Pradhan is described as eternal. I'm wondering how it's eternal yet unmanifest. Is that how it works? Like in the body?
Eternal is what?
It's eternal yet unmanifest. So within the body of Mahavishnu, these elements are existing, but...
He's elevated?
The elements.
Elements.
These elements and pradhan, they're described as eternal.
Well, they're unmanifested, they're undifferentiated and unmanifested. It's a state of being. It's a temporary state of being. But they're there. They're just undifferentiated and not manifested.
My other question is, in these five topics of Bhagavad Gita, karma is considered temporary.
Yeah.
But could the karma also be considered some point manifest, at some point non-met, in other words, the distinction.
Karma isn't eternal, not just sometimes manifest, not manifest. It's not substantial. And Prakriti is. It's Krishna's eternal potency. I think I understand your question. The state of being of Prakriti may be whatever it may be. The Prakriti is eternal. Karma is not. It's a product of the others. And so it's not eternal.
It's just hard to consider something as eternal. In other words, what's the difference between existing and not existing, or manifest and unmanifest? If something is not present, what's the difference between that and not existing? What's the difference between the unmanifest and the, which aspect of it is still existing if it's unmanifest?
You're asking your question again.
Yeah.
It's the same question.
Trying to understand.
The words are different, but it's the same question. Prakriti is, regardless of its state, is one of Krishna's essential potencies, his external potency. Eternally existing external potency, the reflection or the shadow of his internal potency. It's eternally existing. Doesn't come into being, doesn't go out of being. It may change states, but it's eternally existing. Karma is not eternally existing. It has a similar feature. Now you see it, now you don't. So maybe that's where the confusion comes. But it's not just now you see it, now you don't. It's not eternally existing. It's insubstantial. You can ask it again.
Continue. This is a different question, though. Sometimes the pradhan is described in the 12th canto as like a void. Is that a similar conception of some of the Buddhist? Have you heard that correlation between the Buddhist nirvana?
I'd like to see the place, the reference, and the commentary of Acharyas before I say too much about it. There are sections of the Bhagavatam that impersonalists love. Aha! Just see. And then there's the position of the whole of the Bhagavatam, and those passages need to be understood in light of the whole of the Bhagavatam.
Last question. Last question. The number of jivas is considered innumerable in the sense that
too many to count.
It's unlimited.
Too many to count. That kind of unlimited. Innumerable. But finite.
Because I thought I heard that there's a set number, but you can't count it. But Gokulananda showed me a reference in Chaitanya Charitamrita that says that it's ananta. Unlimited. Or
so how do we, this comes into scholarship. And then for scholarship, we're dependent upon our acharyas. And for us, our founder acharya is the principal acharya. So it's similar. This question you're raising is similar to the question of anadi. The living entity in his conditioned state is anadi. Since time immemorial. And Prabhupada's rendering is almost universally, pretty consistently, you know, so far back in time you can't find the beginning. So similarly, the use, my understanding, you know, but it's not well researched, thoroughly researched, that's really what's required. But the living entities being unlimited, is it in the sense of literally it's not a finite number, or literally it is a finite number but too many to count? And you have to see how our acharyas, and specifically our founder acharya, defines or uses that term. This is hermeneutics. This question you're raising, and I can't say that I've thoroughly researched, and therefore the preponderance of usage of the term is such and such. But that's my impression. It's so finite, but so many you can't count them all, and therefore the term ashesha or unlimited is used. And that's not a conclusive answer, is my understanding.
I'm wondering how we can get a more complete understanding of the concept of time. I think in terms of like just seeing a clock and seeing it like go around, that's just all I think of as time, just like the time.
It's a fascinating topic. It's the final topic that Sariputta was writing about and teaching about and speaking about and exploring. It's a concept that Einstein, you know, found very interesting. And for us, we have to use our discerning capacity, but our discerning capacity is fully dependent upon hearing, not the other. The power of the mind to speculate. It's beyond that. So your question was how to thoroughly and properly understand time, and my answer is by hearing. And we have to hear from the right source. And otherwise, you know, our understanding will either be, you know, we just accept that for now, it's limited. And being curious, wanting to know, that's good. But make sure the instrument that you use to try to know is the right one. It's the ear, from the hearing from the right source. And then hearing again and hearing again and hearing again. And it's an important question.
Thank you, Maharaj. Here in this verse speaks about time, and we're subject of time by
yes,
all means.
Of course.
Is it the unmanifested energy of the Lord subject to our lifespan, or is
subject
it
subject to our
lifespan?
Yes.
Is it some kind of energy that our senses cannot perceive due that we're unperfect?
Well, that you gave two options, and I think that the first of the two options needs to be stated in reverse order. Our lifespan is under the control of time, or subject to the influence of time. Time is going to determine our lifespan.
Yeah.
Not our lifespan determines time. Our lifespan may be a measure of time, a way to measure time, but it's time that determines our lifespan. You know, what was the second option?
No, but the question is, I want to come across, is our lifespan.
Our lifespan.
Yeah, our lives. I was born and I'm going to die.
Yeah.
Is it before my life begins and after it ends? Is the unmanifested, is because it is unmanifested.
Is this, what unmanifested?
The pradhan.
Is what unmanifested?
The unmanifested energy of the Lord.
It's eternally existing, so it certainly is existing before you exist.
Or has nothing to do with the senses.
It has nothing to do with your ability to perceive it. It has something to do with senses because the senses are part of pradhan. In the unmanifested state, and then becomes the manifested state, and then, you know, the mixing of the manifested states to make stuff, make bodies and species, yeah, and senses and sense perception and sense objects and the whole deal.
So pradhan in our lives while we're living, we can perceive it if we do the proper, okay,
well, you can't
training or
you can't perceive it because the undifferentiated has now become differentiated. Its state of existence has changed through the influence of time. And now it's elements. It went from pradhan to mahatattva to differentiation of those elements and then mixing of those elements to make. So time is moving the whole machine. And pradhan, in its unmanifested state, is no longer unmanifested, it's in the manifest state. And then it will return back to the unmanifest state through passage of time, through the influence of time, which is under Krishna's will, or sanction. Is that all right? Did it hit the nail? Yes?
Thank you.
Okay.
A little on the same line, you mentioned the influence of time on our urges, on the urges.
Behind the urges is time.
Yes.
The force of time.
I wanted to understand a little better that principle.
You want me to speak on that topic?
Yeah, if well, just explain
it. It's simple. Just take a giant step back. There's some urge over here. Where does that urge come from? What enables the urge to be an urge? Force of time. Force of time is moving the whole show. A little subset of that whole show is the urge for this and that. I want to speak something, I want to eat something, I want to get angry. And so the urge of those things have behind it, you know, an energetic source. And say, conversely, pull the plug on the force of time. Urges are over. They're dependent upon time. They're resting on time. They're moving according to the force of time. And, you know, guna and karma. But you don't have... You have guna because it's part of prakriti, but you don't have karma without time. So, that's the unpacking. Mm. It's in the background. The unseen hand of the Lord. The force of time, his kala shakti. Mm. Kala shakti in its temporal sense, in the creation sense, because in the spiritual realm, time as we know it is absent. It's eternal time. Something else is going on there. Things aren't created and destroyed. There's no karma. There's something that may help you, Acharya Nishtha. In the spiritual realm, there's no karma. There's as we're hearing, everything enters into the spiritual potency of the Supreme Lord, paragraph 1 of the purport.
There's also no prakriti.
Yeah, but that's the prakriti is resting, the shadow was resting upon the object. The shadow potency is there because of the spiritual potency. Durga manifests as Durga according to the instruction of Krishna to Yogamaya to manifest as Durga. It's just a transformation of, or a sub-feature of Yogamaya, the internal potency, spiritual potency. Yogamaya is not material, but she manifests under the order of the Supreme Lord. But there's no karma there for the in the spiritual realm. Okay? And we have two more questions we're going to end. Raktak, you have a...
Thank you. My question was answered. You said that time doesn't exist in the spiritual world.
Time as we know it. Eternal time exists. Time as we know it is conspicuous by its absence.
Is there an understanding of that form of time in the spiritual realm?
I don't know. There is, here's what Jiva Goswami says. You know, what people understand there about time, I don't know. But what Jiva Goswami says is, although time is eternal, by the arrangement of the internal potency, or yogamaya potency, there's the sense of passage of time to enhance or facilitate Krishna's pleasure. Everything exists in the spiritual realm for Krishna's pleasure. So it appears that there's day and night. That's passage of time. The rising and the setting of the sun. The daytime and the nighttime. For Krishna's pleasure. There's no passage of time. Then it appears there's passage of time for the pastimes of Krishna.
So it's sort of like multi-dimensional time.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Maharaj, first I wanted to share an appreciation that all Srila Prabhupada's purports are so detailed.
So like detailed.
Everything is there. Yeah. And then I had... I don't know, I have a lot of questions, but then maybe I'll ask. So, Maharaj, when we say that we have 8,400,000 species, does it mean that those species are in the whole lot of cosmic manifestation or in one universe?
Yes.
One universe?
Yes.
Okay. And one universe comprises of the 14 planetary systems?
14 planetary systems, yes.
That's one universe?
Yeah.
Okay. And many such universes make the cosmic manifestation?
Yes.
Okay. So I wanted to also understand, like, what is the spiritual body made of? Because we usually...
Satchitananda.
So when we say that it has like no blood and no...
That's right.
So I have difficulty in understanding when we say it's Satchitananda, then the body is there.
Yeah.
It's just the spirit soul without the body.
Spiritual form, spirit soul. There's no differentiation as here between the body and the self, the body and the form. Excuse me, the self and the form, they're the same. No differentiation. There's not a covering of the self in the form of a body. The self manifests in spiritual form. There's no covering.
So,
no blood and no veins, etc., as it says in Ishopanishad.
Yes. So, like in Bhagavad Gita, we read that the spirit soul is... like 1/1,000 part of the hair, the end of the hair. So, in the spiritual world, the spiritual body is that five.
don't put yardsticks on the dimensions of spiritual form in the spiritual world as 1/10,000 the tip of a hair, for example. Don't do that. As Krishna so desires, that's what it is. This is speculation. So being curious to know, that's good. But it's the constraints that we find here of time and space don't apply. Mm-hmm. Here's a for example. When godbrother Sachi Sutta Prabhu told me, he once asked Prabhupada, living entity is 1/10,000th the size of a tip of a hair, and it said that super soul is 6 inches and is inside the heart of the jiva soul. So how does it work? Prabhupada said, what is the problem? You know, and then he said it again, that the living entity is 1/10,000th and the super soul is in his heart. So Satyasuddha thought, maybe Prabhupada didn't understand the question I was asking, so he asked it again. He got the same answer. Mm. He simultaneously can be bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest at the same time. There's other answers to that, but don't use material yardsticks to understand what isn't the manifestation of the spiritual realm. According to Krishna's pleasure, that's what it is.
Thank you.
Okay.
Sharampad Swami, what's the definition of the Mathura mood? What is the definition?
What's the difference between?
What's the definition?
Definition of?
The Mathura mood. That,
definition of?
The Mathura.
Mathura Leela?
Mathura mood. Of that's being shown here.
Subal?
What is the definition of the Mathura mood?
Madhurya mood? Mathura mood? Ah. Okay. I'm sorry. I have difficulty. Mathura mood. We discussed it the other day, and somebody thanked me for making it. So, outside of Vrindavan is Mathura, and there's a mood, just as Vasudeva and Devaki have, their other residents also have, a mood where there's a mixture and to some degree a conflict of recognizing Krishna's divinity while at the same time a kind of intimacy that causes one to forget Krishna's divinity. Exactly what we're hearing. So it's a mood of love. They have the capacity to recognize Krishna's divinity. At the same time, there's another force operating in their consciousness and their loving relationship with Krishna where they're a tendency to forget. Now sometimes this is more prominent and sometimes that is more prominent. And that has to do with Krishna and Krishna's pleasure. Like when Krishna comes into the prison house and frees Vasudeva Devaki because he just killed Kamsa, the one who is the terror of the universe. And they were astonished. Although here we're hearing they know what's going to happen, they were also astonished that he killed Kamsa. And so when they came before Vasudeva Devaki, Krishna wanted to be embraced. And they were... So Krishna covered them with his yogamaya potency. They forgot. And they embraced, etc. distinct from, we don't have that situation in Vrindavan. And then further is more of the Aishwarya, certainly some of the Madhurya, but more of the Aishwarya in Dwarka. And then further, in Ayodhya, it's not the same, but some Madhurya and more Aishwarya, and then Vaikuntha's Aishwarya. Is that Srila Prabhupada ki? Yeah.